This podcast is sponsored by Lucy Pet and Equus Grooming Products.
Good morning, podcasters. Welcome to another podcast, Doc Halligan Unleashed with Joey Villani. Joey, do you want to introduce our special guests today?
What, the great Dr. Morris? this is our second time with them, and we love you. You know, I mean, we're fans.
Thank you. I have two fans then.
I think you have more than that. It's you. Last time you were so intriguing to us. We're like, we got to get Dr. Morris back on, because at least me, I need to learn. I mean, Doc Halligan, I mean, you guys are colleagues, but
yes.
Well, I'm the layman here.
I always learn something at work. I do learn a lot of stuff with Dr. Moss. So, Dr. Moss, what topic did you want to talk about today?
Well, I thought that given the current situation with the coronavirus, it would be important and useful to talk about COVID-19 and pets. There are so many reasons why I think we should be talking about COVID-19 and pets, and we get so many questions on a daily basis about COVID-19 and pets. I thought it'd be nice to maybe explore some of those today.
Wonderful. Yeah, it's a great topic. And I'm sure, Joey, as a groomer, you still have a lot of people concerned.
We have so many people asking. And again, I mean, there's so much information out there that you don't know if it's true, if it's not true. And it's funny because the groomers, I mean, every day we're in the line of fire. Not so much. I mean, yeah, we're risking ourselves, but we want to make sure that we are giving good information out to our clients, because we're seeing so many pets every day.
Yes. And my sister, who just moved up from San Diego, was saying pets can get coronavirus, right? So people are very confused, Dr. Moss. So take it away.
Absolutely. Well, the veterinarians are in a unique situation now, because coronavirus, we believe, came from animals. We think it came from an animal market in China, and it hopped species from some animal species, we think a bat, into humans. And we've known that viruses can do this for years and years. But this is a virus which has taken the world by storm. You know, the question everyone has is, can this go into dogs? Can this infect cats? And can those dogs and cats infect me or my family? And this is so new to all of us. We're getting more information every day. What we know right now, that the risk of transmission from dogs and cats to humans is very, very low. However, just like COVID-19, 12 months ago, we're learning new things every single day. So we have to be careful and cautious in the information that we give out. Cats and dogs are getting infected with coronavirus. The first case of an animal getting COVID-19 in the U.S. was a tiger at a zoo. But what we think is happening is that dogs and cats are getting COVID-19 from their owners who are infected. See, cats have come up positive for COVID. Almost every state, almost. My guess is if there was more testing, we would see more positives. But that brings up lots of important points that I think we should explore. Who's at risk? Who should be tested? And how do we go about with that testing?
What was the deal about tigers in the zoos that were positive?
The CDC believes that those tigers who became positive were infected from their handlers. So their handlers were carrying the virus and transmitted it to their tigers.
Now, dogs and cats have a natural coronavirus, correct?
That's the interesting thing, is that naturally, coronaviruses infect humans. Lots of different kinds of coronaviruses infect humans and dogs and cats. You know, there are a lot of coronaviruses that infect dogs and cats, and there are some that veterinarians actually vaccinate against. I remember reading a report early in the COVID or coronavirus outbreak last year of some people getting their hands on canine coronavirus vaccines and injecting themselves.
Oh, wow. My God.
Absolutely. Absolutely the wrong thing to do. Never do that. It doesn't offer any protection.
Are there any cases, actual cases, of pets actually being the ones that are coming down with the COVID and passing it to their pet owners? Because we always hear that's usually the pet owner that gives it to the pet. But is there an actual case out there that's been documented of animals passing it to people?
As of right now, there's no documented cases of a dog or cat contracting COVID and passing it to humans. Every single case has been linked to a positive human giving it to their dog or cat.
Gotcha. Okay.
The same is true with animals in zoos. Gorillas, chimpanzees have become positive. They've all been infected, we think, from their handlers and have not passed it on to any humans. And the same is true with those mink farms, which are getting a lot of press because they're having major outbreaks in mink farms. They appear to be quite sensitive to this virus.
Interesting.
But we feel like, well, what we know is that the risk of getting COVID-19 from your pet is probably extremely rare, if not yet documented. We don't know for sure if it's possible. So if an infected person gives the virus to their dog and cat, how long will that virus be in the dog and cat? Will they shed the virus? Meaning, do they have the potential to infect other people? We don't know the answer to that. So we have to be careful with our pets when you have people in the house that are infected, or with our pets just in general, when they're going out into the world, going to dog parks or going to groomers. The risk is low, but it exists. And until we have more information, we need to use caution.
What are the symptoms that we're seeing in these pets that are contracting the coronavirus?
Great question. So dogs and cats, just like people, are getting respiratory signs. So sneezing, coughing, difficulty breathing, fevers. They're also getting GI signs. So vomiting, diarrhea, decreased appetite. If someone in your house has been infected with COVID and your pets start experiencing any of these symptoms, you should call your veterinarian immediately and, you know, start moving towards isolating and quarantining your dog or cat.
And this is not new, having viruses be able to affect humans and then pass on. I remember the H1N1, I did a doctor's episode, and there was a elderly woman who was sick, and she had her cat laying on her chest, and she gave it to the cat because the cat's little lungs are so small, and she was coughing into the cat. So it's what you're saying is basic common sense precautions if you're sick, no matter what you have, correct, Dr. Moss?
Absolutely, because lots of viruses can spread across different mammalian species, dogs and cats and humans. So we have to be careful. You know, the worst situation in the world would be for someone to give it to their dog or cat, and then that cat go outside and pass it to someone else. Now, there are no documented cases of that happening. I want to stress that. But we just have to be careful because this virus can do so much damage.
One thing I have always had people ask me questions about when they get sick, hey, doc, I have a cold. Can I give it to my dog, or vice versa? And in general, viruses are species specific, right, Dr. Moss?
That's true, except for, you know, the influenza viruses are a great example of viruses that are able to hop to different species. So we do have to be careful. you know, most of the viruses and infections we get are more specific to us, but lots of them can infect pets. And for those people who are immunocompromised, we especially need to be careful, because those those people who are immunocompromised are going to be more susceptible to getting something from their animal.
Well, can you define to the public what a zoonotic disease is? Because that's really what we're talking about, right?
Yeah, zoonotic disease is any disease that a human can get from an animal, from another species. So, you know, veterinarians are in an interesting position, because they're in charge of protecting, you know, the food supply. They're on the front lines of preventing zoonotic diseases, or diseases that can transfer from humans to animals or vice versa. And this coronavirus, you know, it came from an animal. So, you know, veterinarians are out there, they're working with the CDC, they're working with their local governments, trying to combat this virus.
Do you think if somebody in the household, let's just say somebody in the household is sick, comes down with COVID, do you think just for precaution, I mean, because we're going to do it with the family, if you have other people in the house, you're going to try to separate them. The same thing with the pets, wouldn't you say? I mean, you know, keep the dog, the cat, maybe even the bird away from them until, you know, they test negative again. I mean, would that be like one of your best bets if it happens in your household?
Absolutely. So they're saying to treat animals like you would any other person. If someone in your household becomes positive, they're telling you to isolate the animals, keep the animals in a different room, wear a mask around the animals. Do not put a mask on your dog or cat. Not safe thing to do, but people, I'm seeing people doing that. Maybe for funny Instagram pics, but people are doing that. Isolation and quarantine, important, until you're negative. And you should absolutely not let your animals interact with other animals or other people if you're positive.
I'll tell you what was sad that was happening. I was reading articles that were going on, not necessarily here in the U.S., but definitely in Asia, where people were surrendering their pets because they were afraid of the transmission of the disease. You know, because, and at that time, that was early in the stages of the virus, where people didn't know, are my pets going to transmit it to me, to other people? And they were actually, the shelters over there and the streets actually were full because they were just letting them go.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I'm glad you bring that up. You should absolutely not give up, surrender, or euthanize your pets because of the fear of COVID-19. There's no evidence that that's the right thing to do.
And if you live alone and you do get sick, the shelters, I believe, are stepping up to house the animals. It's worth a phone call to your veterinarian to help, because that would be a hard situation.
You know, a lot of people, they live alone or they become positive with COVID-19 and then they're isolated and quarantined, and their only interaction and their only comfort is their dog or cat. So in that situation, I would say, okay, you don't have to isolate your dog for 14 days or until you're negative, but you need to use precaution. Wear a mask around them. Things that you should not do, which people have been reported doing. You should not put hand sanitizer on your pets. You should not put bleach on your pets. There's no evidence whatsoever that this virus can live on the skin or in the hair of a dog and cat. So you don't have to worry about disinfecting their skin or disinfecting their hair. Those are, you know, myths that are not only not effective, but dangerous for your animals.
Does a veterinarian have to treat their areas any different when, let's just say I call up and say that, you know, I've shown symptoms of COVID and, you know, my pet's not acting right and I want to bring my pet in just for a checkup. Is there anything that you guys do differently, or is it just, you know, routine because you're already disinfecting and doing everything for everything else? But is there a different routine?
Absolutely. I mean, if you called and said that you're positive and you want to have your animal evaluated, the first thing we're going to ask is whether or not your animal is showing any clinical signs that warrants an evaluation today. Because we just don't want the exposure in the hospital. We absolutely don't want people who are positive bringing their pets to us. So the first thing we would ask you is, do you have someone that can help you bring the pet so that you can stay home? If your pet's not showing any clinical signs and you're positive, there's not a very good reason for the veterinarian to see your pet right now. The veterinary industry and the Center for Disease Control, the CDC, is not recommending testing pets who are asymptomatic for COVID-19.
How often do you get those calls? Because I'm sure you do.
Often, yeah. We get a lot of calls about testing their pets for COVID-19. If there's no clinical signs, we're not testing for COVID-19. If there are clinical signs, if you're sick with COVID-19 and your dog or cat is showing signs of respiratory or GI illness, the first thing we're going to do is rule out other more common causes, sneezing or coughing or diarrhea, because the risk of infection is so low in dogs and cats. So that's something that a conversation that people should be having with their veterinarians if they're suspicious of disease.
And what's the protocol with dogs? I mean, you're doing the same thing with, you know, swabbing the back of the throat, in the nasal passage. I mean, is it basically the same type of procedure?
It is. So the protocol for testing for COVID-19 in dogs and cats is same as people. So we do pharyngeal swabs, so swabs that go deep into the back of the mouth. We do nasal swabs, so we go deep into the nasal cavity. We do conjunctival swabs, so under the eyelid. And we also get fecal samples. There's a couple of key differences. One is that dogs and cats do not like it when you stick nasal swabs all the way up their nasal cavity.
I was thinking that.
It's not fun. It's not fun for dogs and cats or veterinarians or nurses. So that's a big difference. But, you know, there's different tests out there for humans and dogs and cats. If we have a dog and cat is showing clinical signs and we've eliminated other causes of those clinical signs, you know, we're going to do a molecular or genetic test or an antigen test, just like a human. There's antibody testing out there also if we're suspicious of exposure. But really, veterinarians should only really be testing dogs and cats who are showing clinical signs with a high suspicion for disease. So the antibody testing in dogs and cats, although it's available, at this time, we probably shouldn't be doing too many of them, mm-hmm. per the recommendations of the CDC.
So Dr. Moss, do you think pets are feeling as stressed out as we are during COVID?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, for the longest time, it's been well documented that dogs and cats relieve stress in their human owners. Dogs and cats can reduce your blood pressure. They can give you an overwhelming sense of happiness. They also increase our physical activity, which is great. But now what we're seeing with COVID-19 is that dogs and cats are becoming quite stressed. And they're not becoming stressed because they're worried about catching COVID-19. They're not stressed because they don't know if they have a job. They're stressed because their routines have been upended. So dogs who used to go for walks numerous times a day or go to dog parks or see dog trainers or even, you know, go get groomed are no longer allowed to do that in our stay-at-home COVID-19 quarantines. What we're seeing is an incredible number of behavioral problems in dogs and cats that we never saw before. So now we've got kids who are no longer going to school and they're at home all day chasing the dog and cat around. We've got people that are working from home and that's changing routines. So we need to think about how we can relieve stress in our dogs and cats, who for so long have been relieving stress for us. Now, things to watch for that are key indicators that your animals are stressed: inappropriate barking, inappropriate aggression in dogs, even urinating or going to the bathroom in the house, if that's something new. And that's a pretty clear sign that your dog might be stressed. Cats can show aggression. Cats can urinate outside the box. That's a pretty good indicator that your cat is stressed. So, you know, I think we need to be cognizant of the fact that our emotional well-being certainly plays a role in our animals as well.
Hey, Joey Villani, do you ever talk to your animals? Because I remember I just felt like when Ricky was acting out and my cat. So last night I'm like, Ricky, I don't want you to wake me up at 5 a.m. Mommy needs your sleep. Tomorrow's her day off. And I talk to them. Am I crazy?
No, because I have full-blown conversation. Especially when they are doing something wrong. You know, you're explaining to them that you can't do this anymore. And it's funny because I think they understand. But, you know, Dr. Moss, it's funny what you said about the stress, because my bird reacts to everything. And if I'm stressed, I notice that she is stressed. So, and with COVID, I mean, there's a lot of things going on, you know, whether it affects you or people around you. But there's always so much going on that, you know, you're always thinking. And I noticed that she's plucking more and all. And it's because my mind is traveling and I'm stressed. Matter of fact, I'm in the middle of a move and just moving my furniture around, I could see she's stressed. So it's funny. I mean, you see it in dogs, you see it in cats. You ultimately see it in birds, because birds are creatures of habit. They don't like any change.
Yeah, you bring up a great point. Birds are big ones, and they're such highly intelligent animals that they get stressed out pretty easily. And like you said, the plucking and other behaviors. Changing the furniture around, I can certainly understand. My wife changes the furniture around in my house, and that stresses me out all the time. So I can see how all the change to routines can put a lot of stress on dogs and cats.
So, and they can't come home and have a glass of wine.
Yeah.
No. You know what? Nope. They can share it, but and stop plucking. Like I said, see,
Dr. Moss, as a veterinarian, do you think during this time of stress, do you think it's ever warranted to use medication for animals that are, you know, severely stressed?
Great question. You know, I think that there are a lot of things we can do, you know, giving your bird or dog or cat alone time, trying to return them to some of their normal routines. You know, contacting trainers to see if you can do social distance training. I mean, we can still go outside and enjoy our lives. We just have to do it safely. And we have to set up places for our cats to hide and sleep, you know, for the 16 to 20 hours a day that they like to do that away from the kids who are harassing them. But to answer your question, there are instances where pets would benefit from, you know, anti-anxiety medications, just like people. You know, we know that the anti-anxiety medications have made a huge difference in the lives of humans, whether it's for depression or just a little anxiety. And we have those available to dogs and cats as well. So that's something that you should talk to your veterinarian about.
And Joey, what do you think about having to give, I know Sue, our podcast producer, has a dog that has a lot of anxiety going to the groomers. So I did prescribe some Celio. How do you think groomers feel in general for veterinarians prescribing medication for pets that get anxious going to the groomer?
I think it's a bag of mixed feelings. And the reason why, we understand that some pets need it. On our end, the problem that we see is pets come out of it at times during grooming, and you don't know when, especially when it's a cat, because all of a sudden you'll have a cat and the cat, you know, and then all of a sudden the cat decides that I have teeth and claws and I'm going to bite you real quick, and then I'm going to go back out, you know, to sleep for a little bit. So, I mean, it's necessary. As a professional, you got to be prepared to know that, you know, they go in and out sometimes. But I think it's necessary because there's been dogs that, and I'm going to take cats out of the equation because that's a totally separate thing. But there are dogs that the only way they could be done is by, you know, some sort of sedative. And otherwise they wouldn't be done. And especially when it gets to the point where it's actually affecting them. Like when you have eye gook that's built up so bad and you got to get that coat out of there. And you can't get near the pet otherwise. I mean, and the same thing, you know, around the private areas and all that, it needs to be taken care of. So yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. You know, a lot of people are, you know, worried about giving their animal a sedative for something like grooming or a veterinary appointment. But keep in mind, it's far better to give something to take the edge off than to have your animal stressed at either one of those places. We don't want to be struggling to get something done, and we don't want to hurt a dog or cat. And veterinarians and groomers don't want to get hurt either. So just giving something to take the edge off can make a huge difference for animals.
Well, I think people humanize it, like you know, because the addiction problem, especially in the U.S., is so bad that I think that they're not really thinking about it, and they think about how bad it is in an abuse situation. But this isn't an abuse situation. This is a necessity, more or less. And you know, it's not like my dog is going to be jonesing. You know, give me an oxycodone. You know. You know, well, if that happens, then we got a problem.
And there's, I mean, you know, there's Brutathane, okay? I mean, I'm joking because we have isoflurane and we would say, yeah, you know, Brutathane. The old days, we didn't have the sedatives we have, right, Dr. Moss?
That's right. I mean, in the old days, you know, she says Brutathane, that's but using your muscles to subdue an animal. And we just don't think that's okay anymore. We don't think it's okay to physically restrain animals to the point of hurting them or ourselves. Now we use chemical restraint so that it's done safely and without stress and without pain.
You know, one thing I do, because I have to throw this out because if people are watching this, because a lot of people come to the groomer and they self-medicate. And I know what you guys are going to say, but that's something that everyone, you need to see a professional, you need to see a veterinarian. Don't go by anyone else. Don't go by what the groomer tells you. Don't go by what the trainer tells you. Go to your veterinarian. Get the proper sedation. And you guys can adjust it for us, right? Like if we say, okay, that didn't work, go back to the drawing board and tell you guys can adjust it. So eventually we figure out whatever cocktail is needed, right?
Absolutely. People need to be careful, especially in a place like California or Colorado where CBD is available and it's over the counter for pets and people are self-medicating, you know, not just with their anti-anxiety medications, but things like THC and CBD. Talk to your veterinarian about the safest way to help take the edge off. Don't just give your animal antihistamines or don't just give them something that worked on you. And you're right, you know, the groomer or the dog trainer should communicate with the owner and the owner should communicate with the veterinarian. It's just all about communication in everything we do.
It's funny. We had a form that you filled out, which basically we wanted to see the prescription. We wanted to know the veterinary that prescribed the prescription. We want to know exactly how much did you give it and at what time. Because sometimes you got people that they'll bring their pets to the groomer and they'll leave them there all day. We might not get to that pet. So what we don't want to do is we don't want to then let it wear off. So what we'll do is we'll administer probably approximately an hour before. But we tell them we only want the dosage. We don't want any more. Just bring us what's there. And we also want to see the, you know, the bottle for exactly what it says here, because you can't take anyone's. I had a situation once where a woman came in and said, give my pet three. And I just knew, my antenna went up and I knew something wasn't right. I said, is that what the vet prescribed? No, the vet prescribed one, but one doesn't work. And I said, so the veterinarian said to up the dosage. She goes, no, we kind of experimented with it. I said, no, I'm not going to do it. I said, because I don't know what the reaction is going to be. So, again, I know we're getting off topic here, but actually it was something that needed to be spoken about.
Yes, we could go on and on, Dr. Moss. We love having you on. Would you come back?
Absolutely. Yeah, I appreciate it.
That was very reluctant there. you know, you have to come back. You know, we learned so much.
No. But until you come back, how can people get a hold of you if they wanted to reach out?
They can always get a hold of us through our website, marinavet.com. They can send emails through the website. They can call. You know, my nurses and staff are always available to talk. The veterinarians will get back to you, but the best way, if you're not a client, is to send an email. So marinavet.com, you know, we're in Marina Del Rey, and we're always happy to help and give advice. You know, I'd rather take the time to answer an email about something than have people find the answer on Google, which isn't always the right answer.
And listeners, if you have questions, please reach out to docandjoeyunleashed@gmail.com. And we will have you back again, Dr. Moss.
Thanks. No, I appreciate it. I'd love to come back.
Okay,
yeah,
great.
We love having you.
Thank you. Okay. Wonderful information.
Thank you. Take care.
Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with more free vet advice. And, you know, we're pretty entertaining, aren't we, Joey?
I think so. I definitely think so. And make sure that you like and share. That's really important. And give us questions. We want questions. We want to know what you want us to talk about. So you can email your questions to docandjoeyunleashed@gmail.com.